Welcome to our Farming Water Scotland podcast series. Over this series, we're looking at various mitigation options, guidance and farmer experience to help manage and improve water quality on farm in the surrounding area. In this episode, we're discussing compliance with Stephen Field from SEPA and Alexander Perry from SEC Consulting. You can listen back to all previous episodes in the series and other podcasts we produce for Farming Water Scotland on any podcast provider. Please like, follow and subscribe and leave us a review. I'm Fiona Salter, Environmental Consultant and your host for today's podcast. Today we're joined by Stephen Field, who works for SEPA as the National Rural Unit Manager, responsible for a team of dedicated rural officers whose role is to engage with the farming sector and improve the industry's compliance with environmental regulation, and Alexander Perry, who works with SEC Consulting as a Senior Consultant and Area Manager based in Knock and Groove office. Today we'll be focusing on compliance, in particular general binding rules, examining and discussing the rules and learning from SEPA and SEC's experience with farmers to ensure compliance with regulations and continue to improve water quality. Stephen, I mentioned briefly in your introduction, but can you tell us more about your role at SEPA and the work that you work in?
Yep, I have been working with farmers both in Northern Ireland and Scotland now for over 30 years, advising them on environmental regulations. I'm currently SEPA's National Rural Unit Manager and the lead contact for the National Farmers Union of Scotland and the Scottish Rural Colleges. I have a small team of 14 dedicated staff that work exclusively with the farming sector. We are responsible for delivering engagement visits to farmers within Scotland's 57 priority catchments, carrying out compliance verification inspections in intensive pig and poultry units, and also responsible for dealing with permit applications, variations and surrenders within the PPC licensing regime, and also responsible for the interaction with farmers who are building new farm buildings such as slurry stores and silage pits across Scotland. Also a little bit on AD operations, which is relatively new within Scotland itself. I'm also responsible for overseeing SEPA's implementation of the farming general binding rules in relation to diffuse pollution, and what we had was the old silage, slurry and agricultural fuel oil regulations, which are now part of the general binding rules under the controlled activities regulations. And our main aim is to work with the farming sector to achieve compliance with the regulation.
Just a little, a few things.
Just a little.
And Alex, do you want to provide more information about what your role is at SEC?
Yeah, thanks, Fiona. So, as you've already said, my name's Alexander Perry. I'm a senior consultant and the area manager in Knock and Groove here, and we service Ayrshire and Renfrewshire geographically within Scotland. Although occasionally our team does get outside of those boundaries. We have seven consultants within the office, and that doesn't include the support team that we have, so the likes of our environment team, our vet team, our farm accounts team, and technicians and agricultural administrators as well. So really a robust set of skills within the office, or at least we would hope that's the case. With regards to our role with compliance, I mean, we like to think that we're right at the coalface working with farmers on a daily basis. We service over 600 clients within Ayrshire and Renfrewshire, and it's really our job to be the link between the likes of Stephen and the ARPID office and the farmer, and see how we can best get solutions when problems occur.
Thank you. Beginning to discuss compliance in Scotland with regard to water management, in particular for this podcast, what are the main legislations that farmers need to understand and comply with?
Okay, in terms of the main legislation, it's the controlled activities regulations, which are a set of regulations that cover all water-based activities. There's three levels of authorization. There's the general binding rule, which is the most simplest rule to comply with. They're basically rules that are written down, and if a farmer or any land manager complies with them, they don't really interact with SEPA. There's the higher tier, which then becomes a registration, where you actually have to apply online for an activity, such as an example would be septic tank discharge. And then you've got the tier above that, which is actually a licensable activity. So some of the things that would impact on agriculture from a licensing activity would be engineering activities on the ground in and around watercourses, the abstraction of an irrigation of water to land to crops, the disposal of waste sheep dip or waste pesticide to land, Those would be the main areas that would be covered under a license from the farming perspective.
With those specific regulations, where would farmers find information on the specifics that they need to comply with? Is that all on SEPA's website or...?
No, it's on two, I'd say probably two or three main websites. In terms of, saying applying for a license or an application, then you would get that on the SEPA website. But if you're looking for information, say on general binding rules or know the rules or guidance on diffuse pollution areas like that, would be the Farming and Water Scotland website. Very good website, which has guidance for farmers on various different agricultural activities in and around the water environment.
And what is SEPA's role with regard to these regulations in Scotland?
SEPA is the main regulatory authority for agricultural activities with regards to the water environment. We're responsible for ensuring those activities are compliant, so farmers are actually working in line with the general binding rules. So for example, maybe application of slurry to land. We'd be looking at General Binding Rule 18, which covers when and how that slurry could be applied to land. We've got similar other rules which are very straightforward for farmers to follow. These General Binding Rules originally came from the PETFA Code, which is the Code of Good Agricultural Practice. Some of the activities within that code, which were a voluntary type measure, were actually taken and made mandatory back in 2008. And subsequently, we've taken the old Control of Pollution, Silage, Slurry and Agricultural Fuel Oil regulations and put it into the Controlled Activities regulations under a general binding rule for slurry and silage and anaerobic digestate.
I think on SEPA's website, I saw the performance assessment scheme. Could you provide more information on that, or is it still in consultation?
It's still in consultation at this present point in time. The compliance assessment scheme really doesn't impact on agriculture that much.
Okay.
The areas that it would impact on would be the pig and poultry sector, where they've actually got a license, an authorised activity which they have to basically comply with. So they've got an inspection regime where we look to see how they're compliant with that license. So it'll be the main area that would be affected under the compliance assessment scheme, but it's actually still out for consultation.
I was looking and I had never heard of it, so I was going to use this. And then moving on to farm, discussing, obviously farmers are doing the best practice, they're complying with the regulations, but in both of your experiences, what have you come across that the most common, might not be common, but breaches that result in diffuse pollution or near misses in your experience?
Maybe you can go first, Alex, and then I'll tell you where I find
it. Sure. No, this will be interesting to see where we agree and disagree. Yeah. I think for us, there's a couple of really live issues right now. Obviously, we're a couple of weeks into the funding window for the Agri-Environment Climate Scheme slurry storage funding. So slurry storage is very topical right now, and quite often we do get calls to say, you know, I'm concerned about the slurry storage that I have. I took a call this morning with a client who says, do you know what? Actually, the store that I have is maybe not fit for purpose. I'd like to look at replacing it through the Agri-Environment Climate Scheme. I think that's great, but that does happen every now and again. We do tend to, particularly in the winter and the spring, get calls about people who have insufficient storage for the rainwater that they're being asked to capture, and that's only becoming a bigger issue. And then in the past couple of years, we've seen the integration of precision application of slurry to land, and there are still some farmers who maybe aren't undertaking that to the best extent that they possibly can. And this time of year as well, I mean, ground conditions, I know people will feel the pressure to get on and spread farm waste manure slurry. But there are some instances where those ground conditions aren't acceptable currently. And we just need to be mindful of that as well.
And Stephen, in your experience?
I think Alex actually correct. It depends on the type of part of the sector we're dealing with. So in the livestock sector, slurry is one of the issues which is at the fore of many farmers' minds at this present point in time. The way the legislation's written, all farmers that have produce slurry will actually have to have 26 weeks for pigs and 22 weeks for other livestock over the next couple of years. So with the grant scheme being open, I would recommend or suggest to most farmers to actually look at that scheme and consider where they actually sit in terms of slurry storage at this present point in time. And if they do need or do think they need to do something with regards to slurry storage, they should do it now and not wait. It is one of the key areas. It's one of the areas that we actually assess when we do a farm visit, is we actually estimate the amount of slurry storage on the farm and the amount of slurry that is actually produced on the farm to give the farmer an indication of whether they've got a shortfall or whether they would be compliant with the legislation. Application is always one of those areas and windows that needs a wee bit of consideration. We're starting to see the benefits of precision application when ground conditions are good. But as Alex said, we still do come across farms which are applying with a vacuum tanker and splash plate. In those particular instances, we would inquire with the farmer the reason for doing it and see if they can further develop their approach over a period of time, either using a contractor or investing on a dribble bar or trailing shoe, whatever they have to do after that. One of the other main areas for livestock is General Binding Rule 19, which is the keeping of livestock, and that looks at significant poaching in and around the water environment and the position of feed rings. Sometimes it's easy to put a feed ring near the gate, which unfortunately is very close to a watercourse or small stream. We do come across that activity during the winter period when somebody's maybe out wintering a wee bit longer. And also the significant poaching aspect where riverbanks are basically near enough destroyed and causes erosion at certain points. That is one of the areas that we've seen great success and great improvement is General Binding Rule 19. With farmers using either alternative watering systems away from the watercourse and using things like scatter fences or even putting stockproof fences up to prevent livestock getting in and around those particular areas. General Binding Rule 19 is probably the main regulatory activity where we see the greatest non-compliance. When we do farm visits and we do inspections of land masses, we in a catchment would probably find somewhere between 50% and 60% of farms have a significant poaching issue, and it's one of the biggest non-compliance of General Binding Rules. But we have seen, as I say, significant improvements in that particular area over the last 4 to 5 years, with farmers using different technologies and techniques.
Do you think that's because of the technology that's come into the market or the accessibility to it?
Yeah, I think farmers been more aware of what's actually out there. You know, on Farming and Water Scotland, we've got various different guidance documents with regards to different ways of getting water to your stock, using solar, using wind, using ram pumps. We've got guidance on how to abstract water from the river without having to require a registration or license, so doing it through a general binding rule. That guidance has already been designed and is out there. And I think just with the inspections that are undertaken and farmers directed to the Farming and Water Scotland website, more farmers are seeing the alternative systems that are out there and are also considering, well, from a welfare perspective, do I want my livestock to be in the water environment? Because there's some diseases which are spread through the water. It may be better to keep them out and provide them with a water source. So that's why we've seen such a vast improvement in that particular general binding rule. So we have. Then if you look at the other side of the country where you've got more crop activity, one of our main issues and main non-compliance is General Binding Rule 20, which is the cultivation of land and how land is actually cultivated and the use of buffers in those particular areas. Sometimes we see significant soil erosion from land which has just been newly reseeded after rainfall events. And you know, things like just increasing the buffer in and around the water environment. But one area where we see a lot of loss of soil is out through the farm gate in some of those areas, and straight down the farm road or down a main road and into the watercourse. So it's just actually looking at how the land is actually cultivated and the way it's cultivated. So those are the three main areas where we've main non-compliances we come across when undertaking our diffuse pollution visits.
And just to build on that, Stephen, you were talking about some of the successes that we're seeing. As part of the Scottish Farm Advisory Service, there are provisions there for specialist advice relating to nutrient management, soil management, the water environment and biodiversity. And there's quite a nice kind of catch-all there for managing diffuse pollution on the farm, particularly as it pertains to the water environment. And over the last, I don't know, year and a half, we've seen a significant uptake of people who are looking for water pollution prevention and control plans. They've been looking to use that specialist advice to update their waste management plans in light of the new legislation that's coming into effect. So I think it's all positive with regards to the kind of direction that farmers want to move in.
I think if you look at diffuse pollution and you look at the other issues like biodiversity and climate change, a lot of the mitigation measures that you put in the ground for diffuse pollution actually will benefit biodiversity, but also will be a benefit to climate change mitigation in the future. And it's just how we address that and how we give advice to farmers, both from ourselves but also from yourselves as the consultant on the ground. I think there's a lot of benefits we can get by working together.
And moving into a changing climate, because obviously I feel like every year we're getting more and more extreme weathers, from like drought to flooding to not snow this year, but like every year, like it seems there's something else that farmers need to become more robust and be able to mitigate against. But it's mitigating against the unknown, which is really hard. So you might have already answered this question in your last point, but how are SEPA and the regulations and farm advisors coping with these extreme weather events when your clients or farmers are there trying to mitigate against an unknown and still create produce at the end but comply with the regulations?
I think that there's probably been a bit of a mindset shift in the last wee while. I mean, we've seen there's now a requirement that farmers present their risk assessments for manures and slurry maps, their RAMS maps, at farm inspection. These are very much becoming more of a kind of live document, if you like, far more regularly updated, and people are more abreast of what the requirements are there. So something like that would be a good example. We've also had, you know, businesses who maybe had a farm waste management plan completed during the SRDP days of 2009, 2010, 2011, coming back to us now to say, you know, in light of this new legislation that's coming into effect, I want to know what my capacity is. I want to know how to future-proof myself there. And we're you know, working with these people to put in place practices that can be beneficial. And that doesn't always relate to putting up a big slurry store or a lagoon. You know, it could be looking at things like rainwater harvesting technology. It could be looking at constructed farm wetlands. There's a whole series of options there that farmers are interested in.
Yeah, I think, Alec, you're correct there, especially when it comes to wetter winters and drier summers, as we see this kind of change coming in. To be honest, looking at a farm setting, the first thing my staff actually look at, and I would look at if I'm out, is clean, dirty water separation. And maintaining that in and around the steading, you know, repairing of roof rones, repairing of downcomers, getting that water, that clean water away and out of any area where you've got contamination, will save on capacity within a slurry storage system. So the use of and possible use of constructed farm wetlands to take winter runoff from silage pits or lightly contaminated areas such as middens is something that can save on a farmer's slurry storage capacity moving forward. But I think that's going to be probably one of the key areas As we get wetter, weather during the winters is the increased production of slurry from areas which are contaminated. And as if we can keep as much rainwater out of those particular areas, the better moving forward. So that I think that's key, especially within the livestock sector, is what is falling onto roofs or falling onto open pits and stuff like that. Where is it going? It needs to be collected. How can we deal with it in a different manner? Recently, I've seen a significant change in some of the dairy farmers' perspective in terms of silage making and a lot going for covered pits. And there's real benefits in having a covered silage pit. You know, it, you don't have to collect and deal with quite a significant rainfall in Ayrshire and Renfrewshire that you'll get over that winter period. You can take that clean water away and deal with and work in an environment which is dry. And therefore, when the pit's actually empty, it can be used for other facilities as well. Storage of tractors or even FYM could be stored in it. And I've seen quite a significant change over the years in terms of silage pit design and construction. And that's people just thinking of, I don't want to deal with that rainfall. I want to have a better working environment. Cost comes into it, but it does financially seem to stack up for most farmers.
That's really interesting, actually, how like the mindset and how the good old day practices are evolving and changing and then producing something that you can utilise the water elsewhere. You don't need to put it into there. So it's using all assets on the farm. So looking forward, have you got any innovative or projects that are on the pipeline in the future for farmers to comply with regulations but utilize all assets on the farm?
So there's a couple of examples come to mind. Scoping out a potential project right now with the digital dairy chain. We're actually looking at implementing a rainwater harvesting system for a farm here in Ayrshire. This comes off the back of a carbon audit that we've just completed for the business. We identified that they have a particular issue with the amount of rainfall that hits the steading that currently isn't being captured. And we just think that there's an opportunity there, like Stephen alluded to earlier, to reduce the dirty water accumulated, extend the capacity of the stores that they currently have, and give themselves a little bit more capacity that way. So that's certainly something that we're interested in. This being Ayrshire, I do quite a lot of work with the Ayrshire Rivers Trust as well. We just had a meeting on biodiversity enhancement at Sorn last week, and a number of clients have come to us openly prepared to extend their buffers along their water margins here in Ayrshire, which has been really positive. I think the days of a 3 meter buffer, you know, certainly for some businesses have come to an end. There are businesses out there looking to do a little bit of riverbank restoration, a little bit of extended tree planting. There's new hedges going in. And with regards to tying into climate change and biodiversity decline, you know, that's all positive as well.
Those both sound fascinating. Especially the rainwater harvesting, it'd be interesting to see how that progresses. I think one of the other areas that we're now seeing farmers thinking about is the covering of slurry stores and looking at that. There are a few that have appeared in Ayrshire over the last couple of years, stores with covers on them. I've also been dealing with some farmers recently who have just erected new slurry stores, and they've built them in a fashion whereby they've reinforced the concrete floor in the middle to take a roof at a later stage if they have to or if they want to. Because, you know, during the winter here, you can lose anything probably to half to a ring of your slurry storage capacity, depending on its size, just with the winter rainfall. So that could be significant. So that's an area that I think that some farmers are considering and looking at this present point of time. As I say, it's voluntary. We've got no legislation covering the covering of slurry stores or lagoons at this particular stage, except for the intensive pig and poultry sector, where if you have a pig unit, you do have to cover that lagoon or store at this present point in time.
Thank you, Stephen and Alex, for joining us today. It's been really interesting, and hopefully we've been able to dissect compliance and show farmers where they, one, can get information, two, who they can ask for information, and three, provide examples of how farmers are complying with regulations successfully and benefiting other areas of their farm. And thank you for joining us today. On the web pages, we've saved all links to documents and guidance notes that have been discussed throughout this podcast episode. If you've enjoyed listening, please like, subscribe, and follow our podcast wherever you listen to them. Please get in touch if you want to find out more. Farming Water Scotland is funded by Scottish Government and delivered by SAC Consulting in partnership with SEPA to help farmers and land managers reduce diffuse pollution risk and benefit the farm business.